You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
Scams. That is a word familiar to us Indians. When was the last time we went, say, 12 months without there being a big scam in our surroundings? I'm not talking about the small ones, like the family that went holidaying in Bali and picked up pretty much everything they could lay their hands on from that hotel room. From hangers to towels to iron boards, I think, and mirrors and whatnot. Not those scams, I'm talking of the big ones. Given the slackness in law enforcement in India and a host of other factors, we all live with some amount of certainty that there are scams out there. Those guys just haven't gotten caught yet. And the Reserve Bank of India confirmed our collective pessimism. Over 50,000 cases of fraud had hit banks in India between FY09 and FY19. That's a 10-year period, the Reserve Bank said in a response to an RTI inquiry. So over a period of approximately 4,000 days, India had seen 50,000 frauds. The total amount of money involved therein? 2.05 lakh crore rupees. A grim reminder that India has a long way to go before it can confidently shrug off the moniker developing country, or indeed, scam nation. The scams we forgot is the topic of this edition of Digging Deeper. My name is Rakesh Sharma, and you're listening to Money Control,
the Deep Dive podcast series.
But let's remind ourselves of the one that is going on right now, an update on the ILNFS scam, because, well, bad decisions occur in groups. The ILNFS scam. It emerged in July that there were numerous cases of favors and gifts extended by the erstwhile top management to senior officials of rating agencies and their family members, from tickets for a Real Madrid football match and hefty discounts on a luxurious villa to a Fitbit to shirts to whatnot. Even Fitbits were given. You'd think they'd just wait for the Amazon or Flipkart sale like the rest of us. But no, they wanted to get free stuff because, well, it's free. The continuing probe has already led to the CEOs of two rating agencies being sent on leave by their respective boards. And I've spoken about these things on Stories of the Day. And now that they've gone off home with their Fitbits, here's hoping that they have time for their 10,000 daily steps. And by the way, that whole 10,000 daily steps, that's a myth, but that another day. Meanwhile, more details were revealed about suspected attempts by the former top management personnel of ILNFS Group to influence the rating agencies and their top officers for high credit ratings. According to Business Today, the new board of ILNFS, which was appointed by the government, had mandated Grant Thornton to carry out a forensic audit. The new board was put in place after massive defaults by the ILNFS group to the tune of over 90,000 crore rupees, as well as other less than honest dealings by the former top management were revealed. In an interim forensic audit report on the role of credit rating agencies engaged by the erstwhile management, Grant Thornton has flagged a number of cases amounting to potential favors and gifts given to senior officials of the agencies and their family members. Several emails between the previous management and the representatives of those credit rating agencies were analyzed in the audit. The Business Today reports claim CARE, ICRA, India Ratings and Brickwork were the main rating agencies for group companies of ILNFS Transportation Networks, ILNFS Financial Services, that is IFIN, which is in the middle of a storm, and ILNFS in general during the period. From 2016, Brickwork was also introduced for IFIN and ITNL, that is, ILNFS Transportation Networks. All right, now brace yourself. According to Business Today, Grant Thornton found multiple emails in the period between September 2012 and August 2016, a four-year period, where it appeared that Ramesh Bawa, former CEO of IFIN, facilitated the purchase of a villa for the wife of Ambrish Srivastav, who's the head of financial institutions South and Southeast Asia, Fitch Ratings, and also helped them obtain a discount. Bawa requested Ajay Chandra, who is the MD of Unitech Limited, to personally get involved and resolve the issue that Srivastava's wife was facing with regards to interest charged on delayed payments for this villa. Then there's mention of an email trail from April 2015, which showed D. Ravi Shankar, the founder and director of Brickwork Ratings, thanking Arun Saha, the joint director of IFIN at that time, for arranging tickets for a football match of Real Madrid in Madrid in the ILNFS corporate box along with his son. As for ICRA, The audit found an email from February 2008 sent by Meenakshi Kanagath, a manager in ILNFS, to Ravi Parthasarathy, the former chairman of ILNFS, indicating a donation of 25 lakh rupees to be made to Sameeksha Trust. Grant Thornton found that D.N. Ghosh was a managing trustee of Sameeksha Trust and also a former chairman of ICRA Limited. Emails were also traced where Saha asked Shujoy Das, the chief risk officer of ILNFS Group, to arrange a favorite Fitbit watch for Rajesh Mukashi, the managing director of CARE. Earlier this week, the National Company Law Appellate Tribunal, that is the NCLAT, said it would hear the pleas of auditors of ILNFS, that is Deloitte Haskins and Sells LLP and BSR Associates LLP, against an order passed by NCLT to implead them in the ongoing case of oppression and mismanagement of the scam-hit firm. The case will be next heard on the 19th of August. But suffice to say, all of these people at the rating agencies got some free stuff, and that bait did not prove worth its money. Now, that is the latest scam among us, but there are some scams that time has forgotten. But we won't, because that's the point of this podcast. We have so much on our plates these days. Of course, with the PNB Nirav Modi scam being the big daddy, and now the ILNFS one coming to even threaten the throne of that one, you could be forgiven for not remembering the heavy hitters in India's rather large catalogue of scams. While we do recall the Harshad Mehtas, the Vijay Mallyas, and the Nirav Modis, on this podcast, we're going to do a quick roundup of the great scams that, for some reason, we only seem to have vague memories of. Let's start with the Telgi scam. Remember that name? I'm certain you remember, because it was all over the news back in early 2000s. It was right out of the movies. In 2002, Abdul Karim Telgi was charged for counterfeiting stamp paper in India. The son of a railway employee who started off as a vegetable and fruit vendor in trains, Abdul Karim Telgi attained notoriety as the kingpin of a multi-crore counterfeit stamp papers scam. What did he do? Telgi appointed 350 fake agents to sell stamp papers to banks, insurance companies, and stock brokerage firms. The operation was spread across 12 states, and the amount involved was pegged at 20,000 crore rupees. The investigation revealed that Telgi enjoyed support from various government departments that were involved in the production and sale of high-security stamps. In January 2006, Telgi and several associates were sentenced to 30 years rigorous imprisonment. My favorite part of the Telgi story is this. He was arrested in 1991 by Mumbai police on charges of cheating, but reportedly used his stay in the prison to learn the tricks of the trade from an expert forger. On the one hand, you've got to give it to the man, he's at least interested in learning new things. On the other, talk about unabashed recidivism. A report submitted in 2017 by DIG of Prisons, D. Rupa, alleged that Telgi was among several prisoners who received special treatment in the jail. The facilities included special massages given by three or four convicts allotted to him. But Telgi died soon after due to multiple organ failure. So that was the end of the Telgi scam. And turning the clock back a little bit more, we head straight into the mid-90s for the Hawala scam or the Jane Diaries scam. The Jane Diaries or the Hawala scam made headlines in the early and mid-90s in a sensational case that ended more than a few careers. Here's what happened. In 1991, an arrest linked to militants in Kashmir led to a raid on Hawala brokers, revealing evidence of large-scale payments to national politicians. Not just small-time crooks, national politicians. Very much out of a 1980s Bollywood script. According to court documents, Ashfaq Hussain Lone, who was allegedly part of the terrorist organization Hizbul Mujahideen, was arrested in Delhi. During his interrogation, the police learned that his organization was funded through Hawala using a man named Surendra Kumar Jain and his family as a conduit. Based on this and further information received during Lone's interrogation, the CBI conducted raids on the premises of Jain, his brothers, relations, and businesses. During the raids, the CBI seized Indian and foreign currency, two diaries, and two notebooks at the premises. These diaries, which the case gets its name from, contained detailed accounts of vast payments made to people identified only by initials. Very Jason Bourne type espionage, but you know, Hawala. According to The Hindu, the gist of the allegations made in the Hawala case petition was that financial support was given to terrorists by clandestine means using tainted funds from Hawala transactions. Interpol's definition of hawala is money transfer without money movement. For example, say person A in Mumbai wants to send 100 rupees to D in Singapore. A goes to a person B, who is a hawaldar, involved in hawala transactions and hand over the 100 bucks. B then gets in touch with another hawaldar named C in Tokyo and asks him to hand 100 rupees to D on the condition that D states the correct password. So at the end of the transaction, person B owes person C rupees 100, but person D receives the money that A, in the very beginning, wanted to send him. It's all cloak and dagger. The hawala system is built on intangibles like trust, honor, etc., much like the diamond business in Surat, and the transactions can sometimes be noted down. In this case, SK Jain was accused of playing the roles of persons B and C, that is the hawaldar number one, that is B, and hawaldar C in Tokyo. These are the two B's and C's in this particular case, and SK Jain was accused of playing these roles. Further, since these transactions are carried on outside the law, deceptions invariably lead to gang violence. The report by The Hindu claimed that the CBI had failed to investigate this properly and prosecute those involved, and that it was done to protect people who were influential and powerful. The courts claimed there wasn't enough evidence, and the cases eventually petered out. This was a flashback to the mid-90s with the hawala scam. Break out a smile, it's time for Colgate. Not C-O-L, this time it is C-O-A-L-G-A-T-E scam. I'm certain you all remember from the 2010s. September 2012 saw the unearthing of a scam that involved bureaucrats, political leaders, and several ministers from the ruling political party. I know, shocking. The Comptroller and Auditor General, India's audit watchdog, reported inefficient and possibly illegal allocation of coal blocks between 2004 and 2009. While initially the loss to the exchequer was pegged at a staggering 10.7 lakh crore rupees, the final report stated the scam amounted to 1.86 lakh crore rupees. Again, not a small amount. Essentially, the government of India followed a system of competitive bidding to allocate coal blocks. However, the CAG, that is the Comptroller and Auditor General, revealed that the government followed another route that was opaque and subjective. Speak about a euphemism. As a result of this, the CAG noted that both the private and public sector enterprises paid less, resulting in loss of revenue for the government. After the coal scam was reported, Manmohan Singh offered to resign from Prime Minister's post if found guilty. As more information came to light, the tag of corruption got attached to the Congress government. In April 2015, CBI filed a charge sheet against former Jharkhand Chief Minister Madhu Koda, former Minister of State for Coal Dasri Narayan Rao, and 13 others in a coal block allocation case. This, among others, perhaps responsible for the fall of UPA2. Next up, flashback to 2015, Vyapam scam. These are all the biggest hits. I'm doing a recounting of the biggest hits as far as India's scams are concerned, and this is number one from 2015, Vyapam. This scam involved irregularities and corruption in the Madhya Pradesh Professional Examination Board, or MP Vyavasayik Pariksha Mandal, abbreviated in Hindi as Vyapam. Sometime in 2015, the Congress Party and several social activists alleged that the corrupt officials at the board took money to compromise the examination and recruitment for several professional courses, including pre-engineering, pre-medical, MCA, teaching, etc. The accusations mostly involved teaching recruitments. Not surprisingly, the opposition accused persons at the highest level of government being involved in the scam, including then Chief Minister Shivraj Singh Chauhan, his wife Sadhana Singh, and Governor Ram Naresh Yadav. The Congress claimed that these influential persons used their power to push for candidates via several middlemen, including mining baron and prime accused Sudhir Sharma, of their choice to be admitted to certain courses or recruited to certain posts. The whistleblower in the Vyapam case, an IT expert from Indore, claimed to have accessed sensitive information from the computers of the main accused while assisting the special task force probe the scam. Among other things, he claimed to have gotten his hands on an Excel sheet that contained the names of several candidates and the people who recommended them, and SMS exchanges between the middlemen and government functionaries. The Congress claims that the SDF, in an attempt to shield CM Chauhan, had fudged the original Excel sheet and replaced it with another one in which Chauhan's name had been purportedly replaced with entries CM and Uma Bharti ji. Most shockingly, as many as 40 people reportedly connected to the scam and its investigation died during the course of investigation. In 2015, the Special Task Force submitted a list to High Court, naming 23 people who purportedly died unnatural deaths. According to the SDF, most of these deaths took place before it took over the investigation in July 2013. On February 13, 2017, the Supreme Court of India delivered an 83-page judgment and cancelled the degrees of 634 doctors. That's how that cookie crumbled, Vyapam scam. Oh, and with a good one, and unfortunately, perhaps the most embarrassing one, the Commonwealth Games scam. It genuinely led to a loss of face for India on the international stage. The Commonwealth Games scam, which took India by storm in 2010, involved pilferage of around 70,000 crore rupees. The organization of the Games was such a massive failure that it'll take many years for India to shake off the negative stereotypes that emanated from that inglorious, god-awful mess. The Games were, from the start, tangled in a maze of corrupt deals. The charges included inflated contracts, criminal conspiracy, cheating, and forgery. And at the center of the corruption was Suresh Kalmadi, the then Pune Lok Sabha MP. Investigations suggested that the organizing committee ran a cabal of sorts, and Kalmadi was charged under the Prevention of Corruption Act, that is POCA. He allegedly awarded a 141 crore rupee contract to Swiss Timing for its timing equipment, a deal inflated by 95 crore rupees. New Zealand, Canada, Scotland and Northern Ireland expressed concern about unlivable conditions. The Scottish delegation apparently submitted a photograph of a dog defecating on a bed in the Games village. The BBC released images of bathrooms with brown-coloured paan stains on the walls and floor, liquids on the floor and brown paw prints on athletes' beds. Lalit Bhanot, the Secretary General of the Organising Committee, made matters worse by saying, due to cultural differences, there are different standards about cleanliness in India and the Western world. He then backed that up by claiming, and I quote, "This is a world-class village, probably one of the best ever." Unquote. Like I said, embarrassing, humiliating, even gaslighting when you say there's no dog pooping on a bed and that the standard we have is okay with a dog pooping on our bed. Well, that's something else.
The Deep Dive podcast series.
There we go. Those are the scams that, despite being considerably important in their times, have become hazy events in our memories. I guess no longer. Here's hoping that you spread this far and wide and make us all remember the glorious slash inglorious mess we have found ourselves in from time to time. Thank you for joining us.
This has been a Digging Deeper podcast, and you have been listening to Money Control.